the only way that I've ever really been able to give anybody advice is to know your job, know the resources, and do what you think is right to the extent of, to the full extent of how you feel you need to in order to help people. But it can be a really difficult thing to navigate when you're still trying to deal with some of the things that you've experienced on the same level and with people trying to take you seriously as a cop while you're trying to break those stigmas of women in policing. And kind of step in and use your voice.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference.
111, 1-10. You training to be a street cop? Hey everybody, this is Heather from Street Cop Training. I'm an instructor here and I teach two classes. I teach the complete female cop, and I have a new class that is coming out called Be the Change. Today's episode is a little different than most. Usually we have these roundtable podcast Zoom calls and we talk a lot about what our specialties are as far as instructors. And today's a little bit different. It is in honor and for October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I was pulled to put this together because of my friend Jordan. On August 30th, Jordan was murdered by her husband. They were both deputies in Cleveland County Sheriff's Office in Oklahoma. Hit home for me pretty hard. I feel very blessed and very honored to meet officers from across the country and now even other countries. Canada is here. And I always knew that there was going to be an increase as far as the percentage of people I might know that were killed in the line of duty. But I think because I pushed so hard for advocacy for victims and for awareness for domestic violence, I really never expected to know somebody who was killed in a domestic violence incident that was a cop. I mean, maybe that was ignorant or maybe it was hopeful, but I was able to meet Jordan. She actually just turned 40 at the beginning of August. I met her in May in person. Her and I connected on social media prior to that. And since May, I had really grown to love her more than I thought was even capable, I guess, because of the fact that we're all so distant from each other, distance-wise, like geography-wise. She's probably like one of six people that I had grown really, really close to that I met through Street Cop that I had either never really met or only met once. And on the morning of Wednesday, August 30th, someone messaged me and said, "Hey, I think you're friends with Jordan, aren't you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am." And she goes, "She was killed by her husband last night or this morning." I don't think anybody really knew when, but the backstory to that is Jordan and her murderer, which is, because he doesn't really get the right to be called her husband anymore. They had worse problems than I even knew. And her and I had spoken about their relationship and how toxic it was. And I asked her to promise me that there was nothing physical, and I believed her. And I think all of us will be able to attest to the fact that if we don't want anybody to know what we're going through, we're not going to let anybody know what we're going through, and we'll find ways to hide it. But I guess they had come home from a bar the night before, and as she went to plug in her phone sitting on the end of the bed, he ended up shooting her. He fired 19 shots, and 12 of them went into her face. And I just don't really understand how anybody does that. And as somebody who basically went through exactly what Jordan went through, except my ex-husband just didn't pull the trigger, I was moved to do more. And that's what we're going to do today. So I invited people onto this podcast that are survivors, hopefully survivors of domestic violence and not still going through it. And I really want to bring awareness for all the people out there that are either struggling with it or have, or worry about the embarrassment that can come from it, especially in our positions as law enforcement officers. I think we always believe that we should know better. And there's another level of embarrassment, especially as you know, a male who's going through it or a female, I don't think it matters because there's just these stigmas around it. So I told you about Jordan's story. I want anybody to know who's listening to this podcast that there are a lot of resources out there for you. It depends on the state, but there definitely are resources out there if you need anything. Mental health experts to help as survivors of domestic violence, victim witness services, advocacy, and you guys can always reach me through my Street Cop information. So with that, my story, I'm just going to go real quick, kind of mimicked a lot of what Jordan went through. I was married to a police officer and we weren't married very long. It escalated very quickly. And almost 15 years to the day on whenever this airs, but October 16th, 2008, my ex-husband came home from work and he was really drunk and beat me up for 4 hours. And at the end of it, after he had strangled me and bit my face and headbutted me and done all of these things to make me feel lower than I already did, he pulled his gun from his waistband and held it against a pillow against my head. And, you know, I really thought I was dead and I'm really glad I'm not. I'm also really glad that I did not allow myself to continue to be a victim in the relationship or in my mindset. And I've been able to, over the past 15 years, really turn that pain into a purpose. And I am here to eradicate domestic violence. And that seems insane. And it seems like a really big thing to want to accomplish, but it is my goal. And these four people that are with me today, they are going to tell a little bit of their stories. And then we're going to get into some questions. So Katrina, I am going to start with you, if you take just a couple minutes and run through your history with domestic violence.
Yeah. So for 5 years in a previous relationship that I was in, shortly after, like, a big point in our relationship was when the first incident happened. We were living somewhere else other than where I currently live now. I'm not with that person, but I was living in another state. We were with a group of friends. We had never had any issues before. There wasn't, you know, people talk about like, oh, didn't you know, and weren't there signs? There wasn't anything. It was just randomly one night we'd come home from a friend's house and he had lost something and blamed me. And I was looking in our room for it, trying to find it. Before I knew it, I turned around to tell him that I didn't know where it was and I couldn't find it. And the next thing I knew, I was off the ground, pinned against a wall by my throat. That ended in just kind of like a tussling of everything. That was the first time I'd ever been involved in anything like that. That was the first time I'd ever even like experienced or even heard of anyone in anything like that. No one in my family had ever been in anything like that, not that I knew of. That ended in me leaving holes in our front yard, trying to get into my car. Ultimately, that argument went from inside the house to outside the house. I tried to get away and ultimately I did. Like, I ran away to a friend's house. Same relationship a couple years later, we got into a big argument. And at this time we were living somewhere else. And I lived like a block away from my best friend at the time. She was out of town and another block away was a couple of our other friends. He'd come home from visiting family and I had accused him of drinking. It was like 2 or 3 in the morning. And at this point, mind you, intermittently, I had had it with the alcohol. I'd had it with, you know, all the little bits and pieces, all the small stuff that happens in between. And I kind of just shut all the doors and I locked him out and I wanted nothing to do with him. And he broke in, when I say broke into our room, but he like Jimmy rigged the lock into our room. And he got in and he picked me up by the side of my arms off my bed. And I just remember like catclawing, like in my head thinking like, this isn't going to happen to me again. This isn't going to happen to me again. And I just like went in full self-defense mode and he pulled me off the bed. And I remember grabbing the foot of our bed and he had me by my ankles completely stretched out. And I'm only like 5'4". I'm not long or tall at all. And I was completely entirely stretched out from the arms over at the foot of the bed to like him and my ankles. And he pulled so hard that our footboard disconnected from the framing of our bed because that's what I was holding on to. And it wasn't like plastic prongs. It was like metal bits that dropped down into the wood. And I remember like after everything was done, going back and looking at this and being like, am I going to get in trouble for this? Like, is he going to be mad because this is broken and now we have to buy something new? And at that point, he had like ripped me off and like away from our footboard and like thrown me into our hallway and our staircase was probably only 3 or 4 feet from our bedroom at the top of our staircase. And I remember being at that bottom of the staircase and he's yelling at me, like, get the fuck out of the house. And like, he's cussing at me and telling me all these things. And I'm praying in every bit of me that I don't get thrown down the staircase. I just get up and get out, just get up and get out, just get up and get out. It's all I kept telling myself. And I did. I got up and I ran out and I was just like wearing pajamas and I think I had shoes at the front door. And I ran to my friend's house. And at the time, we called the cops and like I filed in the area that we were at, like with them, but nothing really happened. And at that point, I was kind of like, okay, that was a turning point for me of like, if things slow down and things can get better, like we'll be fine. Like we were a couple of years into this relationship, like things will get better. Things have slowed down. This, you know, maybe that's the biggest one. Like maybe that's it and we'll be good. And a couple of years later, we were at a big event and it happened again. Alcohol was the stimulation of everything. We were out of town, actually. We weren't even in the city that we lived in. And I had driven down there. Or we were in my car at the time. I think I flew from somewhere. And he got mad at me because I walked away because I was tired of the antics and the alcohol and him and his friends together and he couldn't find me. That's what set him off. I don't know if that's what it was that aggravated him, but he was blowing up my phone. And I finally got back to them and we walked from the area that we were at to my car. And I remember him arguing with me in the car and he started the car to take away, to like go off. And I didn't, at that moment, I knew if I got in the car, this is it. Like, this is going to be the last time. And it's not going to be that great because things are just escalating as they go. And I tried to get out of the car. So he put it in drive and my car door was still open. And I just remember feeling someone grab the entire back of my head. And he had stuck his hand in my hair and grabbed as tight as he could and just yanked my head back as he put my car in drive. And I'm holding on to the frame of my car. And I remember just like, I don't know what in that moment just made me bring my hands in, if it was like trying to grab my hand or what. But after everything was done, I remember thinking if I hadn't have pulled my hands in and he hit drive the way that he did, that door was slamming shut and it was going to break both of my hands, if not some of my fingers. And I didn't say anything. I just laid there. Like we got back, he screamed, he yelled, he pulled my hair, like held me that way the entire drive back to where we were staying. And I just remember like crying and being in silence and not saying anything. And a couple months later, our relationship kind of ultimately just dwindled down and came to an end. And it was, that was it. Like it was over. I didn't have to deal with it anymore. Or so I thought, until dealing with the aftermath and family and everything else, it was just, luckily I'm in a marriage and a place in my life that I don't have to deal with that. I've got, you know, people and things and I had support back then, but it was also one of those things that I had never seen. I didn't hear about things like this. People didn't talk about things like this years ago. It wasn't a wide known thing. Social media was picking up, but it wasn't a big thing. And it wasn't something that people talked about on social media or on podcasts or much less with people that they knew. My friends knew a small amount of what was going on, but not everything. I think the only person who knew was my mom. And she pretty much begged me all the time to just get out and leave and go. And I didn't. I was stuck in my ways of I can help or I can figure out a reason or I can find something. I can do something to help it end. Like, I can be the reason that he doesn't do this to anybody else or that he doesn't do it to me anymore. And that wasn't the case. Luckily, I got out. I got in therapy. I talked to people. I got to do what I needed to do. And so it worked for me. And now I talk about it and I could talk about it and still get emotional, but I could talk about it without feeling like I want to break down and like my skin crawl. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else because like I can get teary-eyed, but I get teary-eyed and I cry about it because I was lucky enough to make it out of that situation.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to have people that cared enough to try to talk me through it and help me in those moments, not just like shut out and say, hey, you stick in it and you choose to do that. And like, we can't support you. I still had those people. And even now I still have those people. And it's, I don't know. I don't know that I'd say that it's nice, but it's a relief to be able to talk about it and not worry because the entire time it was, that's not what happened. and I didn't do that to you. And that's not what happened. And why are you telling people that that's what happened? And why are you telling people that that's what I did to you? Because that's not what happened. It happened. I was there. It happened. I know that it happened. And so it's, yeah, I mean, it's been quite some time. It's been, if not over 15 years. Sorry, my kids are in the background being loud, but.
Katrina, were you a cop at the time?
At the time, no. I had actually met that person when we were joining the military. I wasn't in the military anymore, but at that time there were, that's when we had met that person. No, I got into law enforcement. Actually, I just became a cop recently, but before I was a jailer. So yeah, I wasn't a cop at the time. But it definitely helps now, especially like going to those calls and seeing people, like they see us and they see us in uniform and they think that we're just there to like blame or pick on somebody that we don't understand. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, I was in your situation. Like, I know, like, trust me. And so it's, again, not, you know, for lack of better words, it's nice just to be able to have that, to tell them, like, you're not the only one. And you're not the only one who thinks the things that you're thinking or feels the things that you're feeling. Like, those are normal. Those are natural. But also as a reminder, like, hey, I know it's not your fault. And I can tell you that it's not your fault because I thought it was my fault, too. And I had to learn that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. So it's,
yeah.
Thank you. I know it's not easy. You know, 15 years later, and I almost feel like I'm not even the same person anymore. So I don't really get emotional when I tell my story until I start talking about my kids. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But thank you. That's where I have questions, but we'll be back. So, Brian, I'm going to ask you to go next. And I just want to say thank you because I didn't have a guy that had actually volunteered to be on this today. And I think it is so incredibly important, especially for men in law enforcement, because I think, actually, no, I don't even think, I know so many men who have women that manipulate them to stay into a relationship by threatening to have their gun taken away or file that restraining order. And there are different ways of manipulation and abuse that can come from women. And just because it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, men aren't strong because they don't hit back or they can let women hit them. I really want to say thank you. I think it's incredibly brave of you to be on here and talk, and I'm really grateful, but I am going to turn it over to you. I'd love to hear your story.
No, absolutely. And I really appreciate you giving me that opportunity because you're right. Like, the stigma's very real. And it's quite prolific, not only just in society, but in the job as well. I'm originally from the southern U.S. and moved up to Western Canada about 16 years ago. I ended up getting into a relationship that didn't really realize that it was going more of the abusive angle, things like that, because I kind of got drawn into things. Over time, any kind of barrier that I put up to protect myself got beaten down, and things didn't really come to a head until we were already a couple of years in. I still remember I was talking with my dad on the phone, and my ex at the time, she thought that I was talking with some other girl or something like that, thought I was cheating on her. And I remember I was standing at the top of the stairs in the house, and all of a sudden I just hear her screaming, and I felt just sharp pain in the back of my head as she just started striking me as hard as she could. She started pushing me, tried to push me down the stairs. Thankfully, I was cognizant enough to grab the handrail to the stairs. Fled down the stairs as soon as I could, because it just honestly went in the back of my head. I was like, well, I can't defend myself, because if I do, bad things are going to happen. So I tried to calm down the situation. It just continued to escalate. She came downstairs and continued to try and claw at my head, try and strike at my face, things like that. And so I just quickly bolted for the door, grabbed my keys and left. Ended up sleeping in a parking lot of a Walmart overnight, in a lovely Canadian winter, which gets about 40 degrees below. Just shivering in my car, trying to talk to my dad, you know, as he was just bewildered. I finally came back home the next day, because I had to go to work, and my uniform, everything was at the house, and things were seemingly fine, but cut to about 2 weeks later, I was called into work to fix an issue that they had, and I came out of our building into the parking lot, and I still remember just hearing squealing tires, and I looked over in the parking lot, and her car was racing towards me. I dodged as quickly as I could. Just barely brushed my side, and just sat in the parking lot and just continued screaming, yelling at me, and then peeled off and went down the roadway. I picked up the phone, called the agency I now work for, went to file a police report, and communications officer told me, he laughed and he said, "We're not wasting our time with that." And I went numerous times to try and report, went out, filled out my witness statement and everything ahead of time, brought it in. And the viewpoint that I got was either it was just a waste of time, or I must have done something to deserve it. When talking with friends, I'd just they'd laugh and be like, "Oh, well, what did you do? What did you do?" And so that kind of stuck. And even later on down the road, getting into different relationships and having similar problems, where I had a relationship where, you know, they were threatening to put fake domestic violence calls on the board just so that, you know, I would lose my job. And going to my leadership, and they just said, "Well, you just need to, you know, leave your house, because no one will believe you."
So not really leadership, lack of leadership.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm grateful. Thank you. Yeah. Morgan, how about you?
So my partner and I at the time were fairly young when our relationship started, and I mean, it moved fairly quickly. I think one of the big factors we had in it was with his, I guess, career. You know, we got married like a year and a half into it. We had to move cross country for his job, which part of my family was not supportive of that and kind of how that went down. So I lost a big chunk of my support system kind of from the get-go. We moved cross country and we're getting settled. And, you know, I think we had only really been married for a couple months at that point. And it started with, you know, comments, and, you know, there were issues with women he worked with, or women that he was going on, I guess, work trips with, that were very adamant. And eventually he just kind of stopped hiding it or denying it. It went from there to, like, you know, damage to the house. There was still like Sharpie for, you know, "Don't be a bitch" across of our bathroom mirrors. There's holes up and down the wall in the hallway from him getting mad. From the point of kind of when that started, it escalated really quickly. You know, I remember standing in the kitchen and I asked him a question. I don't remember what. It was something rather insignificant. And he was making a sandwich, and what, for whatever reason, that angered him enough that he picked up the plate and threw it at the wall next to me. A few days later, he kind of backed me up against a wall, and same thing. I don't remember what I had said to him or what the discussion was, but I could see him get mad. And I had just happened to like turn at the right time, and he punched a hole through one of our like support walls where the kitchen was on the other side and things like that. And I'd finally, you know, after probably a year and a half, I had called my mom, who I hadn't spoken to since we had gotten married, and was just like, I don't know what to do at this point. I didn't want to call my dad because I knew that it would be really hard for him. And I didn't want to, I guess, give him that. And so finally, my mom told me that I needed to leave because it wasn't going to change. And 13 days after that was from that point was when it kind of really went downhill. Same thing. I don't remember what upset him. That was kind of a pattern, but he had started throwing things and hitting things, and I had been backed into a corner in our house, and I started to scream for help, and he had grabbed me and put me up against the wall, and he told me, you know, I can scream as loud as I want. Nobody's going to be able to hear me. And that was kind of the oh shit moment in my head that I knew the first time that I had really been scared, I guess. So the next day I had gone to work, and one of my friends could actually see the bruising on my arms just outside of my uniform sleeves. And so that kind of turned into the first investigation. And at that point I had just kind of, you know, yeah, it was an argument. You know, I'm really fair skinned. I bruise really easily. It wasn't like that. And we just kind of moved on. I had moved all my stuff into a separate room and thought, you know, time will make it better. And I kind of thought that progressively throughout the relationship, you know, just some space and some time will make it better. The next kind of big argument, he had made a rather large purchase that caused us some financial strain. And that was already a big issue in our relationship, because moving cross country and doing all that, I was kind of put into a wonky position, and that had always kind of been a stressor. He had always had the stable job with, you know, the income that was consistent. So I had come home and I had asked him kind of, you know, what about it? I had walked in after shift and the big financial purchase had some damage to it. And I was just kind of like, you know, what happened? And I could tell he was upset, and he was in the kitchen, and he didn't want to talk about it. And he had said that, you know, I don't care, so it shouldn't matter. And I was like, well, you know, we're kind of stuck with it now. What's going on? And I remember he turned and looked at me and put down the spoon he was cooking with. And he asked me if my body camera was on, which I didn't have. I didn't have my vest on or anything at that time. And I looked down and I said, no. And I looked up, and it was kind of lights out from that point. When I kind of came through, my dog was with me, and I crawled to our guest bedroom and locked myself in there. And at some point he put together that I wasn't there anymore. And so he came and started breaking down the door. I ended up popping out the window, and I had one of my friends come and get me that I worked with from that point, and kind of stayed away for a little bit. There was one other big situation where I ended up, it was an argument over kind of the same thing. And I ended up going to work with a split lip. And I remember my leadership kind of sat me down and was like, you know, we need to be honest about this, because it was a lot in a very short period of time. And when I kind of finally told them everything that was going on, you know, it was a rather quick and very supportive process from the people that I worked with, because I live inside the jurisdiction that I worked with. So I kind of had that double-edged sword on that. There was a brief period of time, I guess, after his arrest that, you know, I thought things were going to get better and be nice. And we talked from a distance, But after, probably after a couple of weeks and him realizing that he wasn't going to get everything that he wanted, it was kind of back to the same antics. So I'm really thankful, I guess, for the support system that I had within my department. Because I truly think that, and some of my friendships saved me from ending up back there.
Yeah. Thank you. Larissa.
So in 2017 and in 2018, I was involved in my first serious relationship. He seemed to be everything that I wanted in a guy. He was really hardworking and funny. He put effort into spending time with me. He was really close with his family, and he was in law enforcement as well. You know, he felt like a guy I could trust, and we got serious pretty fast. So in the beginning, I started seeing some red flags, but I brushed them aside, and I just rationalized that, you know, he was a good guy and I was probably overthinking things. About 1 month after we started dating, he pushed me for the first time during an argument, and I was pretty upset about it, but I just rationalized it again. It was just a push. He was just drunk. And the argument was my fault anyway. And if he's a good guy, why would he want to hurt me? So over the course of our relationship, this cycle of him harming and then rationalizing just became normal. And his actions escalated. So the transition from red flags to abuse was gradual. So little comments about my family or friends turned into controlling who I could see or talk to. He went from, you know, looking over my shoulder at my phone to routinely searching everything that I was doing and communicating to people as me. Our arguments progressed from yelling and pushing to being more physical, and he was leaving marks. We would talk about it afterwards, and he would tell me that he loved me and that it would never happen again. And I'd believe it because, again, I thought that he was a good guy and I thought that he loved me. Well, somebody who loves you isn't going to tell you who you're not allowed to talk to. They're not going to isolate you from your family. They're not going to constantly check your phone or scream in your face and tell you that you're worthless. They're not going to leave you with bruises and then be angry at you because you can't hide them. About a year after we began dating, we kind of reached our boiling point. The cycle kept getting worse and more intense. And one night after I picked him up, he'd been out drinking. By the time the 10-minute car ride to home was over, he had smashed the windshield in my car, jerked the wheel away from me multiple times, was hitting me and the inside of my car, and then he strangled me. When we got home, he stole my keys, he stole my bag, and then he physically prevented me from being able to leave the house. When I finally did leave the house and I was able to get to my car, I called the domestic violence hotline and they asked me if he had done this before. And I said, yes. And they asked me if he had access to firearms. And I said, yes. And then they asked me if I wanted to call the police. And I said, I felt like I couldn't because we worked for the same agency and it just didn't feel like an option at all. Reporting just felt so unreasonable and I just felt trapped. I felt like everything that was happening was my fault anyway. And I kept holding out for any little piece of positive change because I thought that, you know, love was holding on when things got rough. I mean, in my case, I was extremely lucky. I had family and friends that were looking out for me and I had a really positive outcome. One of my friends actually reported him and he was charged and he was removed from his position in law enforcement. And I mean, I always feel lucky to be where I am right now. So very thankful to my friends and family.
Thank you so much. There's so many things that I heard all four of you talk about that just, if nobody's ever been a victim of a crime, they're not going to understand that while all of you are going through and reliving what you endured, like we still have the feeling of that fear that we felt when we went through it, right? We're re-victimizing ourselves every time we bring it up. We can feel that pit in our stomach. We can feel our heart rates get faster. There's that underlying fear that comes back in. And then there's the shame, right? Especially talking about it out loud, because you know that there's people out there that are looking at all five of us and they're thinking, well, what did you do to deserve that? Like, why did you allow it to keep happening? Why didn't you leave after the first time? Especially if you've already been in law enforcement and you are supposed to have the training, there is this judgment that comes with it that I don't really think people understand. So thank you for all that. And I just, Morgan, you had me tearing up because the whole part about your dad, I feel, right? I came from a family that there was no domestic violence. I mean, they were just, it was all love. It was, there was nothing like that. So when my ex-husband told me to call my father, I was like, no, because I knew my father would either show up and he would get hurt and killed, or he would call the cops and it would be, you know, suicide by cops. So, you know, you started talking about that. And I don't know if anybody else feels this way, so I'm going to put it out to all of you, but do any of you carry guilt on behalf of other people who feel guilty about what you went through?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I know, you know, for my dad who came, he actually came down for like part of the criminal stuff and then the civil proceedings afterwards and kind of sat with me. And, you know, still till this day, it was, you know, he could have protected me. He could have, you know, helped me or found, you know, and I'm sure he could have, but it was hard to explain to him that, you know, part of it was I wasn't ready, that I wasn't in the mindset to kind of admit to it. And honestly, you know, I tried to explain to him, if it wasn't for like some of my friends who saw the signs, who are, you know, who are also cops, who saw the signs and saw the injuries, that, you know, I don't know if my hand wouldn't have been forced, if I would have been ready or had the opportunity to get myself ready, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. I'm going to ask some questions that I know people want to ask and aren't exactly appropriate for some people to ask, but I'm going to ask them because I know I've wondered it myself. Why'd you stay? And Brian, I'm going to ask you first. Why'd you stay after the first time?
That one was kind of two-pronged. One was the stigma behind it, just because it was always the viewpoint of basically, I just need to, you know, man up, or that, wasn't really as bad as, you know, it seemed to me, or whatever the case may be. One of the big factors for me was, at the time, I was a recent immigrant to Canada, and I was afraid that if I really pressed anything initially, that ultimately I would have to leave the country. And that's what I kept being told by the lady that I was in the relationship with at the time, that basically, yeah, if I, you know, did anything or tried to leave the house, things like that, that, you know, she would just report me to Immigration Canada and that I'd have to leave. And I had really no support network. I had no family that lived up here with me. The friends that I had were just kind of clueless and didn't really know what to do, and or just kind of laughed it off. And just kind of got stuck in that.
Katrina, do you mind answering that question too? Why did you stay? Why did you let it continue?
Initially, after the first incident, alcohol was involved and we were fairly young. I wasn't even old enough to drink then. I was still under the age of 21. And so for me, after the first point, I used alcohol as the excuse of, well, he was just drunk, or we were just drunk. And then rather than using it as he was just drunk, I turned it into recognizing that he had a drinking problem. And for me, it wasn't that I could fix him. It was, no one else is acknowledging that he has this problem. And so if I say and I acknowledge it, then maybe hopefully one day he'll acknowledge that he has this problem and he'll want to change and make things better. And then we won't have the problems that we have anymore. And I was actually in therapy, you know, throughout that relationship towards the end of it. And they told me something that I think I tell other people a lot and that has stuck with me. And it was, it doesn't matter how much you want them to change. They're not going to change until they want to. And it has to be for them. You can beg, you can plead, you can cry, you can ask. And anytime they do it for you, you're just going to revert right back to square one because it's not for them and it's not what they want. And it has to be for them, as selfish as that sounds. And in those 5 years, it was never for me. But I think at that point too, it was one of those things where I never reported anything and charges never actually like formally got filed. So in that 5 years, like I said, my family hadn't ever gone through anything like that. And people in my family hadn't ever been apart from the people they were with. And I didn't want to be the first one. And so it was, I don't want to look like a bad, like significant other. I don't want to be the one to quit, essentially. I don't want to be the one that looks like they gave up. I didn't want to have the negative light. Looking at it now, those should never be things that cross anybody's mind. But in that moment, you know, that was just, I didn't want to be the one to look bad. And I didn't want to be the one that people talked about. I mean, even now, like, I didn't want people to talk about him either at the end of the day when everything was said and done. But in that moment, I didn't want to look like the person that was giving up. And I didn't want to be the person that was quitting and just, like, you know, not fighting, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I think as law enforcement officers, we sacrifice so much of ourselves to help other people. And I think an underlying theme I hear a lot from survivors of domestic violence who are cops is that we sacrifice our own mental and physical health to hopefully help the person that we love be able to be better, right? Like, we love a certain way. And so we hope that the person that we're with loves a certain, can love that way too. And so it comes down to maybe hope. Also, you know, next question is for either Morgan or Larissa, because the two of you were both sworn law enforcement when it happened. And as was I, do you feel now, whether or not people know, or they know, or they don't know, I mean, I'm assuming they know, but that you talk about it. Do you feel as though that there is this, like, I don't know, label above you, like, oh, that's the DV cop. Right? Do you feel like you get pushed in that at all, or have to deal with that stigma?
I know for me, especially right after it happened, there was a lot of that. It got to a point where I guess I kind of eventually just embraced it. I think part of it was people didn't really know how to handle it or react to it, especially people who I wasn't close with. But after I kind of embraced it and, you know, was able to do different trainings and everything with it, you know, I'm fine being that resource for, you know, other officers who need it.
What about you, Larissa?
So when everything happened to me, I was a cadet at the time. And because we worked for the same agency, there were a lot of rumors going around. But there wasn't any negativity towards me. It was a lot of people that were being supportive. Although people were trying to figure out what happened, you know, I would try and be straightforward with it. And I still am now. Like, I'll be more than happy to tell anybody that I went through, and hopefully, you know, I can be that resource for somebody else, or I can be that support, because I know what it's been like, and I'm more than happy to be an open book and let you know.
Yeah. I think, you know, 15 years later, some days I get really exhausted, right? But, you know, like, I'm just, it gets tired. Like, I know October is coming up. So I know that for the whole month, I'm going to be dedicated to bringing awareness more so than I even do. And I just, some days when you move past it, you don't get over it. You kind of just move past it and you move forward. I know for me, I'm like, man, some days I just don't want to be Heather, the DV survivor anymore. I just want to be Heather. You know, I want to be me, and I want to be in my relationship, and I want to be happy. But I also know that if I don't talk about it, that there are so many other people that may suffer or not have a resource or feel like they're heard or think that their job or their status or wherever they're at makes it even harder for them to come out and talk about it and get the help that they need. So thank you all for being that person. I think everybody here said that they are probably in another relationship that's healthier now. So I guess the question I get a lot is, how did you move into another relationship and transition and not worry that it was going to happen again? And that's open for anybody.
For me, it took a long time. My now husband is actually somebody that I've known since high school. So we kind of reconnected when my previous relationship ended. But I mean, if he were here, he would tell you that there were times that, like, even now, I think we were talking the other day, we've been together for almost 10 years, he and I. And even now, I've done therapy, I do therapy, we talk, we communicate, but he will, you know, like, have a drink every now and then, and I, like, the hair on the back of my neck stands up. Or, like, I notice that he's drinking, and he's not a heavy drinker whatsoever. Like, me saying this out loud makes it sound like my husband drinks all the time, and he doesn't, but I pick up on, like, the smallest thing, right? Like, he'll normally have one beer, and he has two or three, and I'm like, I get on edge, and I watch. And he's like, you know, like, it's not the same thing. And I'm like, I know, like, you just got to give me that time. Like, you got to give me that thing. I think it was just a matter of being upfront and honest with him about what I went through. And it took a lot for me to be able to say that to somebody else, knowing that there was that fear of, I can tell you, and it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to go that you support me and you're not that way, or you're going to turn around and you are that way and I don't know it, and you're going to use it against me. I think it was a lot on my part. It took a lot of crying. It took a lot of, like, separating and distancing, and I shut down a lot. And he made the conscious effort to, anytime I built a wall, he tore it down. And it was just to prove, and not necessarily to prove, but just to genuinely show that he wasn't that type of person and he wasn't going to do those things, and that wasn't in the cards for us. Talking about it, therapy, like I said, 10 years in, and I still sometimes, like, the hairs on the back of my head stand up, just like, that's one more than normal, or that's one more. But I also have to remember that not everybody is that person. Not everybody is an abuser. Not everybody is that evil, awful person that I was with before. And
because you're not,
you know, a lot of good that it does, right? Like, yep. Me thinking that, right? Like, of anything, if I live my entire life assuming that everyone is going to be that way, I'm going to live my life miserably.
Yeah.
And in the end, like,
it's also really important to realize that we think about the other people and how they're going to treat us, but we're the people that don't abuse others. So there are people out there, right? So we have to focus on the fact that, you know, there's always that one bad cop out there that makes all of us cops look bad. And it's the same thing when it comes to people who are abusive. So yep. I really own it completely. Anybody else? Brian, how did you get into a healthy relationship and trust somebody?
It was kind of a process. I ended up floating through a number of tumultuous relationships, and ended up kind of falling into a pattern with a lot of very controlling, very emotionally and psychologically abusive relationships. My last one before I met my current wife, I guess, well, my last, like, major relationship before I met my current wife, was just very, very up and down. And it was a lot to try and overcome. I ended up being very fortunate and having a last minute roommate that I had to get just a place to stay off of, because I was new with a new patrol squad and was homeless for probably 2 or 3 weeks following a very, very abusive relationship. I just answered a phone call, and it was the father of one of my classmates, and he was a PTSD psychologist in town here. And he said, "Well, I've got a room to rent. The rent is free. and just move in whenever you want. So I drove over to his house and stayed there, and it really gave me a lot of time to grow and time to heal from a lot of those previous relationships and actually focus on me for one of the first times. It was kind of up and down there, because even trying to do mental health work and whatnot in the job is interesting, to say the least. Tried to reach out for help, and my boss at the time was very, very old school. I think had at that point had 25, 26 years on. And when I tried to take a little bit of time off from work, he used that as an opportunity to try and get me fired initially. Thankfully was not successful in that, obviously, but it did kind of create a little bit of a roadblock for me I'd have to overcome. But I slowly worked through things on the side, still kind of hidden in the shadows on that. But thankfully, because of that roommate, it allowed me to kind of work on what I needed to. And then I met my current wife during the height of COVID, of all things. And because of that, we couldn't really meet face to face. And so it was literally just like this. It was Zoom calls every day. And getting the chance to just talk to her, and we talked for hours on end without any of that direct contact, things like that, I got to know her a lot more. And I got to know, okay, she's not this type of person. She is a genuine type of person. She's one that will actually allow me to heal, actually allow me to go forward. And she was the first person really who took me seriously. And especially took me seriously in the things that I had gone through.
That's great. Larissa, I'm going to ask you a question. So are you ever triggered by anything at work that brings back, you know, those feelings of what you went through? And if you're not comfortable answering that, you don't have to, but.
There are definitely times where I'll go to a call and I wouldn't say that it triggers me, but it definitely, like, it'll bring me back a little bit, but not in a bad way, not in any like a PTSD type of way, but like, I know where you are at currently. And, you know, I'm glad that I can be able to be here to help you now. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Just trying to gather my thoughts.
Yeah. I kind of threw it at you, so it's all right. What about, actually, either for you or for Morgan, when you're responding to a call, do you work with anybody that is non-sympathetic to domestic violence victims? And how do you handle that?
I mean, I wouldn't say that people are non-sympathetic, but there are definitely, you know, you go to calls and it's the same people all the time and you get used to it. And people will make comments, but just because we go there all the time, or you've been there a couple times, like, you don't know their whole situation. And at the end of the day, like, it is our job to go there and to be empathetic and to provide the best service that we can. And I mean, if somebody makes, you know, a smart ass remark about it, like, I'll say something about it. So, yeah.
Have you felt that's hard to do?
No, I mean, luckily I work with good people. So if they say something, it's usually not anything that, you know, is actually mean or negative. It's more of like a joke. And at that point, I don't really have any problem addressing it.
That's good. I hear after I speak to people and I tell them my story, I often hear from a lot of women that are cops, not even men. Actually, I haven't really heard it from men, but women will be like, you know, I don't know how to do this. They just don't take domestic violence seriously. They told me that I am too vested, that I'm spending too much time, that I have to focus elsewhere. And so they're always like, how do I handle this? And the only way that I've ever really been able to give anybody advice is to know your job, know the resources, and do what you think is right to the extent of, to the full extent of how you feel you need to in order to help people. But it can be a really difficult thing to navigate when you're still trying to deal with some of the things that you've experienced on the same level and with people trying to take you seriously as a cop, while you're trying to break those stigmas of women in policing and kind of step in and use your voice. But it sounds like, one, you work with really great people, and I think that's incredible. Not everybody is that lucky. There are definitely people that work with that good old boy mindset. And I don't mean just men. I just mean the good old boy mindset where, you know, we'll come in and why are you calling us? This is a personal issue. You know, this can't be happening. Why you keep reporting it, but why do you keep going back? Like, you're wasting our time because we've given you the resources. And that can be difficult to navigate, I think. So thank you. What about you, Morgan?
I think, you know, there's definitely people with that mindset. And I would be lying if when I started this, I didn't have a similar mindset, you know, of, you know, if I was ever hit or touched or treated that way, you know, I would be the first one to get out. And it's hard if it's something you don't experience. And I mean, I do work with a lot of amazing people, and a lot of them, I mean, they know my story. They know at least a little aspect of it. So if I do, you know, say something to them about how I think it can be different or better, you know, how they can approach something, you know, most of the time they may not be receptive to it in the moment, but if we talk about it later, you know, usually they're like, yeah, you're right. Or, you know, they have some, I guess, realization moment, especially if it's like, think if it was me, if you responded to my house like that, how would you have treated me? And, you know, they're usually very receptive and very, you know, I think it comes from a different mindset when they think about it that way versus just, you know, the person that we see every other day or something like that.
That's a really impactful statement that you make to them. That's really good. So what I want to say is, one, I believe that there's still a whole lot of work to do with the criminal justice system. I very much believe that the criminal justice system is a system that provides justice for criminals and not for victims. I honestly hate the word victim. It makes me feel weaker. And when I look back at who I was, I still have shame and guilt and anger, especially since I brought two incredible kids into the world and they were a part of that situation. There's that added level of guilt. I know that for me personally, I'm going to do everything I can until I can't anymore to try and combat any kind of abuse whatsoever. And so here's how we're going to end this today. To anybody who's a survivor of domestic violence out there, thank you so much for getting out, for putting yourself first, for making the decision that your life is more important and that you realize that love should not hurt. To anybody who's listening to this who is a victim right now or going through it or maybe doesn't realize they are because they don't want that label, but you're in a relationship that doesn't make you feel better about yourself and doesn't help you be the best version of yourself, that it's time to get out. Like, life is too short. There are absolutely no reasons to stay. If you use your kids as an excuse, if it's part of it, you're just setting them up to be in a relationship that where abuse and being derogatory and disrespectful is normalized. And I don't think anybody really wants that for their children, or at least I hope not. And my last call is to any of you out there who think it's okay to make other people feel less than. If you are listening to this and at any point you have said something hurtful to anybody, I don't even care if it's someone you're in a relationship with, but, or you've put your hands on somebody, or you think it's okay to control another person, please listen to everything that we said and realize that that's not okay. And it is not an us problem. It is a you problem. And you need to take the steps to be better. If you're a law enforcement officer, I probably feel like there's part of you that isn't nice to anybody, really, or you fake it. But at the same time, when you have someone in custody, you might try to control them in a way that shouldn't be. So let's all just be better. Let's stop putting labels on the people that we work with. Let's stop judging the people that we work with and the people we come in contact with through work, and realize we are all Jordan. And on August 30th, she was taken way too soon by someone who felt it was okay to not let her live. And then on top of it, with her son in the same house. I'm so grateful to be able to have this platform to hopefully make change. And I am so incredibly grateful for you, Katrina, and you, Brian, and you, Morgan, and you, Larissa, because it is very, very, very brave to come on here and be able to share intimate moments that you lived through knowing that there are still going to be people out there that judge you. So I'm grateful. I'm just so thankful that all of you are here. I'm hoping that this podcast episode makes a real difference. I would like to see justice for Jordan. I hope you guys all follow the case. Vaughn Cannon is charged with first degree murder. And from what I know, they are seeking the death penalty in Oklahoma. I will give updates on my social media. I will follow it. I will continue to press forward and make sure that everybody knows Jordan's story and that everybody knows that it doesn't matter where you work and where you live, what kind of relationship you are in, that domestic violence affects all of us. With that, again, if you were triggered at all by anything here or you have dealt with it and don't have the resources, please reach out to Street Cop and I will personally get them for you. And I will be here as someone to support you. I will do what I have to do if I know that something is going on that should be stopped. But we are all here for you. And this company is not one that shies away from the hard topics. We are not the kind of company that will brush past things that make other people uncomfortable, because at the end of the day, we want everybody to be able to live their best life and to really make a change and to make sure that law enforcement throughout the world is better off because of the impact that we are trying to make. So thank you all so much. Remember, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Be there for somebody. And if you need advice, as far as you know somebody who's going through it and you don't know what to do, just be there for them. Don't ever judge them. Tell them that no matter what, and no matter how you feel about what they should do, that you will always be there for them, because that is the most impactful thing you could say. So thank you all very much. I'm so grateful for your time. Please be safe out there. And Street Cop out.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.